Thanks for listening to the TC America podcast. This is Joe Jordan. And about a month ago, I started this podcast, and quite frankly, I'm overwhelmed with the response. I hope people would listen and take some interesting tidbits out of the podcast and provide some insight to the series and its participants. But it's really been an incredible month. I am really shocked at how people have really encouraged me. So thank you for that. It has been quite the learning experience with its ups and downs, and I need to apologize to a couple drivers that I interviewed but had really bad sound quality, and we'll have to re-record their in-depth interview soon. So big sorry to Michael Hirkson of SCP Euro and Chris Haldeman for X Factor Racing. They're two that I unfortunately didn't do a good enough job on, so I'll continue to try to improve that. Before episode 6 starts, I also am excited to say that we have a new partner with the TC American podcast, and that's Corksport Performance. Corksport Performance is your Mazdaholic stop for performance parts. Since 1998, Corksport has been giving love to all the ignored Mazda models which everyone drives. 20 years later, Corksport is the leader in manufacturing a full range of performance parts for the Mazda Speed 3, the Mazda 3, the NDMX-5, and more. We have real people that will take your phone call. None of that email-only BS from a store being run out of their mom's basement in Detroit by a guy named Chuck. Corksport supports simple bolt-on mods, giving you guidance and advice to build your Mazda Speed 3 to over 600 horsepower and be a terror on the track. So please, if you have a Mazda and you're looking for performance parts, please support Corksport, who supports the TC America podcast. Without further ado, episode 6 has 10 questions with Mason Felipe, the driver of car number 12 in the TCR series, the Copeland Motorsports Hyundai Veloster N. We have Inside the Series with Jim Jordan, the TC manager, and an in-depth interview with someone who I had never met before, Rob Crocker, who drives the Tech Sport Racing number 24 Subaru BRZ in TCA. We hope you do continue to enjoy the podcast. And if you want to participate as a partner, you're welcome to email me at joe@tcamericapodcast.com. Or if you have any ideas, thoughts, processes, anything you'd like to do regarding the podcast, feel free to send me an email. Thanks all, and enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Touring Car America Podcast. Where touring car racing comes to life. You'll get in-depth interviews with drivers, series officials, auto manufacturer reps, and unique personalities through SRO, America's Touring Car Division. This is the Touring Car America Podcast, and this is Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America Podcast 10 Questions with Mason Felipe. Did I get that right? Is it Felipe? Or how do you pronounce your last name, Mason?
It's Felipe.
Felipe. I'll try to remember Felipe. That. So, Felipe, welcome. What was the first car you ever owned, Mason?
Was a 1989 E30. It was a 325i.
Was it? Were you old enough to drive at that point, or was this before you were even old enough to drive?
So I got the car before I got my license, and then I, put a little suspension on it, and then I put a seat in it and kind of fixed it up a little bit. So then when I did get my license, I drove it to school. I was super excited.
I bet you were. Okay, when you were a kid, even though you're 20 now, so think about when you're like 5 years old. What did you want to be when you grew up?
So when I was a kid, I really wanted to be a professional motocross rider. And then it kind of transitioned into becoming a professional race car driver. But I remember riding on the bike with my dad when I was like 3 years old. And then I got my own bike when I was 3.5 years old. So just kind of started my motorsport love right there.
So motocross or road course type motorcycle stuff?
Motocross.
Cool. Three, I know the answer to this, but most of the people don't. Do you have brothers and sisters? If yes, how many and where are you in the mix?
So I have one younger sister, and she's awesome. She's totally into cars now, and, she loves coming to the races, and her name's Ella. She's awesome.
Yeah, I've met her, and she is pretty cool. I know she's into horses and that kind of stuff and horse jumping and that kind of thing. But, yeah, that's cool. I wasn't sure if you had any other brothers and sisters. Question number four, what's your go-to order at your favorite restaurant?
Probably a burger.
A burger.
I love a good burger.
Well, yeah. You know, being young, you still have the benefit of being able to eat what you want. Be careful, or you'll turn out like me. So as you get older, you got to watch that stuff. Number five.
Hey, now I'm so close to San Francisco, I could just go and I get myself a lettuce wrap. No one asks me two questions. It's the dirty computer.
There you go. Our question number five is, what do you wish you knew that you know now when you first started racing cars?
I wish I knew that it's a much more relaxed kind of place. It's, you know, everyone wants to kind of be friends. I wish I wasn't so scared of everybody when I first showed up from the Tecniata.
Yeah, I remember when you showed up and you were pretty quiet and just kind of eyes wide open and watching and trying to figure it all out. So I was there when you first started running. So that's good advice. I like that. Okay, number six, what's something that you failed at?
I failed at altitude tricks, but then I passed it. Calculus.
I don't know many race car drivers that can pass calculus myself. There's probably a few, some of those engineer types, but that's a tough one. Okay, question seven is, if you could choose walk-up music like in a baseball game, you know, the pro players all have walk-up music, what song would you pick?
Oh, no. that's so hard. It'd probably be like a pretty cool Eminem song. I can't think of one off the top of my head right now, but, you know, just some good, like, pump-up music, you know, or some electric dance music. I'm not sure yet. I can't decide on my walk-off.
All right, so we've got three more questions, so we'll come back to that and see if anything pops in your head. But I think techno or electric music would be pretty hilarious as walk-up music for you. So question number eight, what would you do on a normal non-race weekend?
I really enjoy washing cars and then going for a nice drive.
Wow, do you wash your parents' cars then, or only your cars?
I wash my dad's car, my mom's car, I wash my car, my sister's car.
Wow.
And then,
so next time you're in that mood, I may drive by and just drop my car off for good washing. I've never heard a 20-year-old say that's what they like to do, so that's kind of shocking. That's cool.
I like to go and I find like a nice drive and then I go and find a good place to take pictures. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I do follow you on Instagram and I have seen some of your car photos. Pretty cool stuff. So number nine, what's your favorite book that you've read?
Favorite book that I've read? It has to be between the Percy Jackson series and The Art of Racing in the Rain.
Yep.
I think I'd choose The Art of Racing in the Rain now, but probably before I'd choose Percy Jackson series when I was younger, but I really like that book. It's a really good story and, you know, kind of hits you in the field.
Yeah, are you excited for the movie to come out? I think it's in August, so pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah. Okay, question 10. When you're alone in your car, you just watched it, you're going out on your favorite drive. Maybe your girlfriend's there, maybe she's not, but if you're alone, are you singing along with the music?
Oh, for sure, 100%.
So you're rocking out, you're singing along, unless it's just electronic music that doesn't have any words. But yeah, so you're going for it. All right, so we're back to that walk-up music. What would that one song be? Can you think of anything?
Oh, walk-up music. Let me think. Oh, man. Ah, it's so hard.
I know, it always stumps people.
A one name for a walk-up song.
You know, if you said Eminem, you can just think of one song of his that maybe his most popular one. I mean, I can think of a couple Eminem songs, but I don't want to spoil it for you.
Is it the 8 Mile song?
You can do the 8 Mile song, sure.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it at that and
right.
And then you can tell me when I see you in person. So thanks for playing the TC America 10 questions.
Thank you.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America podcast with Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America podcast, and I'm here with Inside the Series with Jim Jordan, the touring car manager for SRO Motorsports. Jim, thanks for joining me again. Looking forward to Portland, which is now a couple weeks out. Actually, it's a little bit less than a couple weeks out. Really, about 10 days out.
Yeah, 10 days out, heading to Portland a week from, basically almost a week from now. So get up there early, and Portland's an interesting event for us because we're the headliner. We also, though, work very closely with the local sports car club there. It's a it's an event. The Rose Cup is a classic historic sports car weekend in Portland. It's part of the Portland's the Rose City, so it's part of the Rose celebration of Portland. And we have some club racing classes that are on the docket with us. And it's one of these weekends that just there's a heck of a lot of racing going on if someone's a sports car fan.
Yeah, you've got Spec Miata, Spec Racer Ford for club racers, as well as some vintage classes. So I really enjoyed it last year, seeing all the different types of things joining the touring car series up there, and the SRO GT4 class this year. So, it's always a good weekend to me to be there just to see the different types of cars that are running.
What I like also for touring cars, since GTA class in particular is the entry level class for someone coming out of club racing to go pro racing, the Spec Miata folk know some of our competitors in TCA, and they get to see how these folks are doing. So it's for the long-term growth of the class. I kind of like these events where we're affiliated with top-level club racing people also.
Yeah, it's definitely a different little bit of a twist. I know that they're usually paddocked across the front straightaway from where our paddock is, but, you know, it's great at the end of the day just to kind of cruise around and check out all the different things, because you know, every time I go to a different area of the country, people run different cars. So if you're from the southeast or the northeast and you come out to Portland, they run totally different cars there than they do local to where you are. So it's really interesting to see those different vehicles that you don't normally get to see. So the schedule is kind of packed on Friday. That's the 12th of July, qualifying and practice for both the TCA TCR and the TC classes, which would then put us Saturday into the races with the TC race in the morning and the TCR TCA race in the afternoon. So it's going to be a packed weekend and a packed schedule. So I'm looking forward to that, and I kind of like having racing on you know, separated from qualifying. It makes the day more interesting to me. It's like sometimes with qualifying being so close to the race, it's hard for the teams to really go for it in qualifying, so they can repair stuff overnight if they have to. So it means qualifying is going to be wild.
I think Friday is going to be one of the more interesting practice days we've had in a long time. The second practice session is longer than our usual practice session, but we're going to have all the classes out there at the same time. We ended up with a total of 38 entries for the weekend, so we had a couple of folks show up that originally hadn't expected, and one in particular I'm excited about is the Hart Racing BMW. They had a very challenging weekend at Sonoma. They showed good speed, but they ended up rolling their car. So they were initially not thinking they were going to make it, but Toby Krahovich from Classic BMW sent them a lifeline, and so they've worked out a deal with Toby that they'll be there running a combined Classic BMW Hart Racing entry. so that story just tells me why I'm just so happy to be in the TC world, because to have two rival teams get together, Toby, who is just, you know, former champion, class team, class guy, that they're going to let and work out a deal to let the Heart Racing guys run at Portland again. Just great teamwork, great sportsman ability. So just great. The other kind of interesting news is Michael McCann is back. However, his Audi is now a sequential out. So we actually have a six-car sequential field this race, and we have all the brands represented again. So it's a little bit like BIR, that we have sequential cars from Alfa, Audi, Hyundai, Honda, and Volkswagen all competing. So it's only a 9-car TCR field. It's not what I want, but I'm happy to have all the sequential cars represented. So should be a good field and should be a good race. TCA class is its usual strong self, I think we're going to see just some minor tweaks with BOP to try to help out both of the front-wheel drive cars. They've been able to show speed for one lap, but by the end of the race, every race so far this year has been won by a rear-wheel drive car. So Marco Faso-Grove and his group have been working hard. Scott Raymond with Orica Engineering, they've come up with a BOP that we think is going to make it to even more level than it has been. So Portland, I think, is going to be just a great race in every TC class.
Yeah, I want to say that, you know, Hard Motorsports, it was their first pro weekend at Sonoma, and they did, you know, their driver ran third for a while, had some bad luck, and ended up maybe sixth or seventh. But a brand new team, their first pro weekend, and now one of the oldest teams in the series, one of the stalwarts of the series, really, they've been running for a while, is helping them out and is working together and looking for solutions. And that kind of just goes to show, you know, come play with us. Come race with TC America. It's a big family. Everyone tries to help each other out when they can. And I'm really glad to hear that. I don't know, is it Sean Webster driving again? Do you know? But the Hard Motorsports team began.
Yep, he's driving again. And again, they'll be under the classic tent in one of the classic BMW cars that Toby has. And again, just from my perspective, that's what I really love about our paddock. We competed incredibly hard on the racetrack with no quarter given. Everyone just fights hard to win. But when your fellow competitor has an issue, it's just great to see the team stepping up and helping. And I've seen that so much this year, and that's just what I like, whether it's drivers coming to a new track and track that they've never driven before and having fellow competitors share videos and share data, share whatever I can to get them up to speed as much as possible. That spirit of really great competition, but also just that almost like you said, a family atmosphere of trying to help out the fellow competitors too. Really makes me proud to be part of the TC America paddock. It's just a great place to be.
Yeah, and the previous episode, you may not have listened to it yet, but Mason Felipe talks about one of the things he wished he knew when he was first starting racing was the paddock is full of friends, and he had no concept of that coming from karting. No concept that that's the way it would be. And he wished his younger self knew that he knows now. He loves the World Challenge paddock. And what you're saying there is just another example of that. And for McCann's group to fix that car and to add a sequential box after having a rough go up at Sears and practice is really amazing to me, for them to put that together. So I'm excited to see that car. And I'll be excited to see that car with that box, chase the front.
I will say, Joe, that you're overestimating their ability. The biggest thing they did was to write a check for the new car.
Oh, I see. Well, I would like to compliment them on turning around that check extremely fast to be able to get a new car. in, you know, going. So that's impressive.
Yeah. And I'm not 100% sure it's the car that they ran for Audi at VIR, but that wouldn't surprise me at all.
I got it.
I think they may have already had the car in the shop, and they just had a good deal put together with Tristan at Audi, and so they're going to be running the new car, and I think the old car's become a parts car for their DSG Cup car. So, but again, this is this after this race, I keep hearing rumblings from my friend north of the border that we're going to expect some big fields for from Watkins Glen on to the rest of the year. I'm aware of. In the U.S., I'm aware of at least two more cars that are apparently coming to Watkins Glen, one Honda and one potentially new Alfa Romeo that rumor has it may be coming. So you add that to the Canadians, and again, I'm going to be disappointed if I'm not in the high teens and an outside chance of 20 TCR cars at Watkins Glen. So, and I tell you what, that will be a fantastic show, no matter what. But if we could pull 20 cars total, that's going to be amazing.
Jim, I think you're you may be letting cats out of the bag that you may need to stuff back in there. I'll be amazed if you get 20 cars there. That'd be awesome. I also know
it
that
maybe just a dream. Maybe just a dream.
I do know that. Some of the bigwigs listen to this, believe it or not. It's kind of shocking. They listen to this podcast, and they may hold you to that number. So be ready for that.
Well, I've been sort of telling everyone for a while now that Watkins Glen is kind of the start of, in some ways, for some teams, maybe the 2020 season. So I'm expecting, just good things. There's maybe a new turnkey race car in the TC class showing up at Watkins Glen that still appears to be on track. And again, I think the fields are going to grow certainly for the last three races of the season.
I will say,
38, nothing to be ashamed of. I'm happy with my 38 entry, but I'm much happier when I'm over the 40 mark.
Yeah, I got you. And I will say that TCR BOP, I'm sure, will be welcomed by those front-wheel drive cars that do struggle with tire degradation and those kind of things. So that'll be exciting to see how that equates the field. It'll probably create more movement through the field during the race as well, which will be good because really the last 15 minutes of some of the TCA races have been melodramatic. They've been great battles up until then. But I think now with a couple modifications, that could make a really good race.
That was absolutely the exact discussion we had today with the folks doing the BOP. Is the BOP is fantastic and incredibly good for the first half of the race. However, in the second half of the race, the rear-wheel drive cars just, they're a little easier on their tires, and they just seem to have a little bit of an advantage. So we're hoping with the BOP that we don't upset the balance, but we have, instead of halfway through the field, having the four different manufacturers battling for the lead, and then either Mazda or Subaru pulling it out at the end, we're hoping on that last lap we have four different manufacturers saddling it out to the very end. So, again, I can't give enough credit to our tech guide. Again, the conversation that Marcus, Scott, and I had today was just really good, where everyone voiced their opinions, and hopefully end up with something that puts on a great race for the fans that come out to Perth.
Great. All right. Well, I appreciate you spending the time with me today and looking forward to getting up to Portland and enjoying the Pacific Northwest. If people want to figure out how to buy tickets, I will make sure that there's a link in the notes for the show. And Jim, is there anything else you'd like to add before we close it out for this week?
I probably talked too much already, Joe, so no, I think I'm good.
All right. Really appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you up at Portland.
Thanks, Joe.
Hi, my name is Corksport, and I'm a functioning Mazdaholic. It started in the golden dot-com days, slinging parts across seas, you know, hanging out in the garage. But one thing led to another, and we kept saying, this could be better if we did this. That's how it always starts. With one small thing needs to be fixed, with something that could always be better in one way or another. The next thing I knew, I was singing Go Fast Mazda bits left and right, and somewhere along the way ended up with race cars hanging out in my garage. Now it's time to take those cars out of the garage and get back in the game. We'll see you at the track. Love, Corksport.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America podcast with Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America podcast, and I'm here with Robert Crocker, the driver of car number 24, the Tech Sport Subaru BRZ. And Robert, I've never met you in person before, although I've seen you from afar. I have learned that you're a 22-year-old man in California, in Los Angeles area. So tell us a little bit about yourself and where you live and what you're about a little bit. And then we'll go back and I'll kind of prompt you on the rest of your life.
Okay, cool. So I hail from Newbury Park, California, actually not too far from where I think where Pat Long is from. He's from Thousand Oaks, which is the next city over. And I've lived here my whole life. Quite a little suburb north of L.A., and I really love it out there. We've got a lot of wilderness mixed in around us, which is kind of nice. About me, I mean, really, I've been kind of into cars since a very young age. I was surrounded from a very young age by muscle cars, eventually developed into a love for racing. I got a real love for airplanes as well, the old radial aircraft engines and piston motorcraft engines, and boats, too, are pretty cool. So anything kind of mechanized and moving.
That's what you're all about.
As far as as far as being an actual automotive guy, I'm really an old school, you know, sports car, race car. I'm a fan of the manual transmission. In fact, I have one tattooed on my wrist, so that's some real dedication. but yeah, long story short, that's me.
Okay, so tell everybody what your job is too, because I think that's pretty unique. I have not heard of someone doing this before.
Ah, okay. So I am a tour guide in the vault at the Peterson Museum, which is a fantastic little gig down there. But yeah, it's very unique. Not too many people that I know I've ever met somebody that does that. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. So let's go back. You were in Newbury Park as a young kid. Was your parents into cars, or how did you find the love for cars? Where did that all begin?
So my dad was a lot more into cars than my mom was. She knew like a Ford from a Ferrari, but not much else than that. My dad was a big fan of the Blue Oval, always a Ford guy from a young age because my grandfather was also a devout Ford guy. He had a 65 Fastback Mustang when I was growing up that I always really loved looking at. Candy apple red, beautiful car. He used to work on it a lot on weekends and go out for rides in it, and I remember the noise of it, 289 V8, beautiful, absolutely great sounding car. And, growing up, watching on TV, you know, whenever the Indy 500 would come on, you know, back in the day, and also when they would race sports cars, I think it's the American Le Mans series, and then the occasional Formula One race kind of skyrocketed me into the motorsports atmosphere. Realistically, I grew up around cars, so that eventually developed into the love I have now.
And from talking before, you mentioned that video games was one way that really piqued your interest in being a race car driver or in a race car engineer. So explain that a little bit. So you came across a racing game and just explain to us what game it was and what made it so impressionable on a young guy.
Big shout out to Polyphony Digital for making Gran Turismo 2. That game, when the sun went down in the summer especially, I would just, from about 8 o'clock until maybe 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, I'd be glued to that TV playing Gran Turismo 2. That game single-handedly has a massive effect of nostalgia for me. Growing up playing that, the way the cars would shoot flames and the different noises they made and all the different styles of cars you could choose from and all the race cars in there, that car is single-handedly responsible for the reason why you know, I really love race cars, especially because of that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty incredible. Not growing up in that video game era like that, it's kind of amazing to me to hear that, and I could see how it could captivate a young mind and a young person to really want to get involved. So there you are. You're a young guy. You're, say, in high school. And were you into cars in high school, or what's the story there? So tell me about that. Tell me about that age. Were you trying to figure out how to race them? Were you, you know, how did you get involved?
So in high school, I was absolutely still into cars for sure. And when I got my Subaru, my little WRX hatchback.
So that was when you were 16, you're a good kid, you got a car. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, at that point in my life, I figured out that I lived next to a bunch of canyons, especially some very famous ones like Decker Canyon, Potrero, Mulholland. Those are very fun to drive at upbeat speeds in a car that's all-wheel drive. And so I started figuring that out and got really good at kind of zigzagging up the canyons back and forth under the veil of night when I wasn't supposed to be driving, at speeds that I wasn't supposed to be driving, which probably looking back was really not a good idea. But, you know, I was younger, so I guess I thought it was a good idea then. But doing that kind of got me the actual feel for it. And that's kind of where it started as far as the actual driving side goes. I mean, that all culminated in me getting a pretty hefty speeding ticket, which my parents were really very not thrilled about. In fact, they were like a millimeter away from selling my car, but I, by the grace of God, convinced them not to. You know, and then at that point, started seriously considering what about getting on a track and trying my luck there, where it's actually encouraged to go fast.
So how did you find out about tracks? Like, what was the process for someone? You know, your parents weren't necessarily going to the races or going to the tracks.
Right.
How did you just use the internet to find out, or what? Forums or something?
Not necessarily, actually. I knew a guy in high school who would go to the racetrack with his dad, and his dad was big into taking his race cars to the racetrack or taking his cars to the track. And I'd known about, like, Willow Springs is, like, the closest one. So, he would go there. And then also, through, I used to watch on YouTube, there's a lot of those guys that put their onboard videos, and I'd just see all the different racetracks. I remember thinking how different they look on the onboard video as compared to on the video game.
Right.
So that kind of got me a little more curious there, too.
Yeah, it's amazing for, you know, generationally how much YouTube has affected up-and-coming drivers, and they see those things, and they just decide they've got to do it, and you just have to kind of find your path. So that's very interesting. So I know, how many years have you been racing, Robert?
A little bit over, a little bit over a year.
Okay, because that's what I was going to get at, is I know that you ran the Porsche Boxster Series. Did you do any track days or anything before you did that, or what's the story? Give us a background there.
So that started off by doing those HPDE events, the high-performance driving events, which are really important to kind of learn the fundamentals and track etiquette and just simple mechanics. It's like keeping your hands smooth, looking through the corners. I mean, it seems really basic when you do it. But the effects it has in the long run and ingraining the kind of basics into your head is really, really good. And then after that, started doing some actual proper time attack stuff. So not actual wheel-to-wheel racing, but, you know, lap times. And that kind of helps you to focus once you have the basics on how to set consistent lap times and how to get comfortable doing the same thing over and over again. Yes. How to build up your speed.
So who did you run the HPDEs with? Which organizations?
That was with the Porsche Owners Club, POC, out here in Southern California. They're called Performance Driving Schools in that little league there. So they're more or less like an HPDE, you know, point to pass, following the leader, classroom sessions, telling you how basically to be good boys on the track, good boys and girls. But before that, actually, I should throw in that my first time on the track was at Bob Bondurant's driving school outside of Phoenix.
Okay. So you went to a professional driving school, and that's how you really got your first feet wet.
Yes. So that was the first time I got my feet wet in it. I'll tell you what, a Viper GTS is a very strong car to get your feet wet in, but it was a good practice. So that's what they had us drive there. I don't know why they trusted me with a Viper, but it ended up being okay. And then they trusted us with a Formula Mazda on the last day, which is just absolutely crazy to me to think that you trust these people who are first time on a track with a Formula Mazda. But hey, it paid off because it went really well.
And you were, how old were you at that time?
I was 19 years old. I was 20.
Okay, so you're 20, and you go to the Bondurant school. They lay the hook in your...
Oh, no, sorry, I was 19. Sorry to interrupt. I was 19 years old.
No, no problem at all. So they set the hook in the big fish's mouth that is Robert Crocker at 19 years old, letting him drive a Viper and a Formula Mazda. I can see how that hook could get set pretty deep. So from that point...
Yeah, it was pretty nice.
Yeah, from that point, what did you do?
Well, I had about a six-month period of waiting where I had no idea where to go from there. I'm like, okay, great, I did the school. Now I don't know what to do from here. I didn't think about the next step, but I didn't actually think anything. You know, I thought I'd go, and I thought I'd be, oh, okay, you know, this is fun, but I don't know if it's a real option for me to be a race car driver, you know. And so after that, I was like, wow, that went actually a lot better than I had anticipated. I had a lot more fun than I thought I would. Like, I still thought I'd have fun, but I had a time of my life. And I was one of the fastest guys there, and I was like, hey, you know, that could be something. And so this thought started to kind of sit in my head, but then I didn't know what to do next. I had no idea because I don't come from a racing background, so I said, well, like, you know, so I had to figure that out over about 6 months of where to go from there. And then that ended up me going to the Porsche Owners Club with the HPDE events is what the next move from there was.
So how did you choose that? So you're just scouring the internet trying to get ideas and thoughts from people? I mean, did you have anyone to lean on, or... I'm just curious.
I do have a random guy at a Ducati dealership in Westlake. Me and my dad, we like to go around to all the local, like, Ducati dealership, Ferrari, just go cruise around and look. And my dad, he owns a Ducati, so he knew some of the people at the Ducati dealership, so he always goes in there, hangs out, you know, says hello. And I always get to check out the bikes and all sorts of cool stuff. And some random guy in there overheard us talking to one of the Ducati at Westlake employees about, how I don't know where to go now that I've done this Bondurant school. And some random guy said, hey, I know a guy who runs a shop in North Hollywood that does these Porsche Boxsters in this Porsche club. And I've always been a fan of Porsche, so I was like, ooh, you know, is it expensive? He's like, no, not relatively expensive. If you want to get on a track, it's really not cost effective. I was like, all right. So he gave me his number. Called the guy up, and then from there, the rest is history.
Wow. So just some random conversation.
Random guy eavesdropping in a Ducati dealership.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I mean, I guess that goes to show there for someone like you who doesn't have a family that's done it, and you're trying to find your way, you're a young guy, a little bit of luck of just running into the Ducati guy. I mean, that's wild. So you get...
In coincidence, too. Like, what are the chances, you know?
Yeah. So you get you go down to this guy in North Hollywood who's got these Boxsters. You check them out, and you kind of just start talking to him. Do you rent one? Do you buy one? What do you do?
So his name's Dan. Dan Espeezy runs a team called the Speed Gallery out of North Hollywood. They're Porsche Boxster mainly operation, and I gave him a call. And he told me on the phone, he said, look, I have one that I'm building right now for me that I was going to build for my own personal use. But if you want, you can come out to the streets of Willow Spring, and I'll lend it to you for the day if you want to try it out, drive it, see what you think. He said, it's not fully done yet, it doesn't have a cage, but it's got, you know, race coilovers, and it's basically set up for a driving day. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll give it a shot, see what I think. And I rented it, and that car ended up becoming the car that I would use as a spec Boxster. It was slowly but surely upgraded into the spec Boxster finally. And that's how it kind of started. So, once again, random coincidence. Just so happened that the car was being built that I would end up using.
And you liked Porsches, but it wasn't, you know, if it was a different kind of car, you'd probably still be interested because you didn't know any other thing, right? I mean, you weren't exposed
to it. Exactly. I mean, honestly, I was willing to drive it. I was willing to drive a shoe with wheels and a single cylinder motor if that was what it took. You know, like it. But Porsche, obviously, it's a 1999 Boxster. It's a spec Boxster. It's an older Porsche. It had like 180,000 miles on it. It had been gone through. It was a clean car. But honestly, yeah, if it was, you know, a Mazda, if it was a Porsche, if it was a BMW, it didn't matter. You know, it was a good enough. It was a track car. It was a starting point, right? So I looked at it.
Sure. And so you did it as a track day car and slowly built it into the spec Boxster. And then you start running, and did you just run Porsche Club Racing, or did you do other racing as well?
I initially did Porsche Club Racing, yes. So I rented the car for the day, and I was at the top of the leaderboards for the kind of hot-lapping session, if you will, which already, I mean, it was relatively low competition, but it was kind of an ego stroke saying, hey, I kind of just hopped into this car, and I was already fairly quick off the bat, you know?
Yep.
And so,
So you're thinking that you're going to run Formula One soon because someone's going to notice you, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of naivety of it. I was like, oh, man, you know, who knows? Maybe I could be running with, like, Lewis Hamilton or, you know, whatever in the back of my head. Really, like, I'm thinking, like, that's an actual option.
Right.
But, you know, good to dream. Sure. Hey.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, even
start somewhere.
Yeah, even when I went to driver's school, and that's 1989 is when I went to driver's school and started racing myself. I had huge dreams and huge things, and I thought it was like any other stick and ball sport. If you were good, you would get noticed and you'd get a ride. Oh boy, was I wrong
there.
Yeah. So yeah, those.
Yeah, isn't that nice to think that way, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So really, that's not that long ago. So you were 19 then. You probably started doing the Boxster racing, the cars actually in Porsche Club when you were 20 or 21.
Yeah, so, I was 20. Yeah.
So it looks like you've had
20 and 21. I was racing the Boxsters.
You had some success racing the Boxster, it looks like, and you did pretty well. So talk about that experience.
Yeah. So that was probably the funnest point so far. I absolutely love. And still to this day, I go out to all the Porsche Club races and hang out. I know I have a lot of friends there, you know, that are also fairly young as well, but also some older guys that have been around the block, you know, that used to race in Grand Am and so on and so forth. That had a lot of experience at the pro level, so just going there, that was a really great operation they have running there. I really love the Porsche Club Racing because it's almost to the point where it's full out professional competition, because a lot of these guys are former pros, so they're not ready to lose even at a club level. They have that competitive bug, you know? It never leaves, even if you're not racing professionally anymore. It doesn't leave your body. And so learning to race with guys like that really kind of teaches you how to, you know, get down and dirty in a way that you normally wouldn't be comfortable. Like getting real close, sticking mirrors inside of windows, you know, things like that. And I had a handful of wins, I think, actually, in the first season that I raced. I won 8 out of 16 races, which, you know, was a solid starting point. But, you know, at the end of the day, it still is club racing. There's a lot of other factors that are involved in the higher level, as I'm finding out. But it was really good practice for how to deal with a race weekend in terms of actual, like, strategies, you know, how to deal with practice and qualifying and actual how to race, you know, how to start a race. That's the one thing it taught me the most, is how to get positioned at the start of a race.
And I think you ran against
more than anything else.
There was a bunch of multi-class races going on at the same time, too, so that had to help.
Yes.
Learning how to deal with different.
And the slowest class.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm sure that helped you.
We had sometimes, like, Porsche Cup cars blowing past you and knowing how to deal with the right-of-way. And, like, what is giving too much room without being a pushover, you know? Kind of learning the hard way.
Sure.
So it was really good practice for that, too. Just track awareness in general, being aware of what your surroundings are.
So how did you find TC America and, you know, what was formerly Pirelli World Challenge? How did you find and how did you get to touring car? Tell us about that.
Okay, so this, once again, is one of those random, you're going to be convinced that I have the universe, just all these chances falling at me, and I'm almost kind of convinced I do, which is kind of nice, you know, but I was looking where to go from the Boxster, thinking, okay, you know, if I want to try to dive one step deeper and see where I can go, where do I go? So I, you know, considered, I did a couple NASA events, and that was really fun, too. They run a really tight ship at NASA. I ran some SCCA events, same thing. They run some really tight ships, no bad words there. And then by chance, I discovered, well, I talked to Jeff Sexton on the phone. He also races in Blancpain GT. I think he races with a classic BMW right now, and he raced with Tech Sport last year.
Yep.
And talked to him on the phone. I talked to him for probably, I think, 40, 45 minutes the first time we talked. And he basically, because I had no idea what I was going to do, I'm like, look, I have no idea what to do in terms of where to go from here. I considered doing the MX5 Challenge, which is another really good outlet as well, right? Because it's a really good practice run there. And he basically told me, he said, hey, you know, I'm racing with a team right now that does Subaru BRZs. It's called Tech Sport Racing. And the guy, Kevin, I'll give you his number if you want to give him a call. You might be able to set something up. I think it would be a really good fit for you. And so, once again, like the Ducati guy in the dealership, I was referred a number. I gave a call, and then from there, you know, that was it.
Gotcha. So you show up to Circuit of the Americas. Had you ever been there before you showed up for the first race weekend with the series? Had you ever been there before?
Yes. Yes. So I had been there as a spectator numerous times for F1, but I had also been there about a month prior. Actually, no, about 2 weeks prior for an SCCA Hoosier Super Tour event, the Polar Prix.
And what?
So I had a little bit of experience there.
What car did you run in the Super Tour then?
It was a MX-5 built by Winding Road Racing for the MX-5 Challenge hosted by Winding Road, but it was running in E-Production.
Gotcha.
In SCCA. But it wasn't necessarily competitive in E-Production. It was a bit heavy and a bit underpowered compared to some of the more purpose-built, like, chop-top E-Production machines that you see, you know?
Yeah, but you're just trying to get experience on the track driving it before you went to your first pro weekend.
Exactly.
Yeah. So...
And that... If you want, I can tell you a little bit about that. That was a really interesting experience.
Yeah,
too.
Please.
That the Polar Prix lived true to its name. It was like 34 degrees and raining that weekend, which was not ideal because coming from Southern California, we don't do wet weather days. We don't do, like, rain races because they hardly ever happen. So I get there. I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be real fun. You know, let's see how this goes. I've never raced in the rain before, and this car doesn't have a roof, so I know I'm going to be pretty low visibility. And not to mention, they red flagged the track in the morning because there was a lot of ice from the night before because of the kind of sleet and ice because it was so cold. So I get there, and the first race I ran, the car, fourth gear was broken, so it wouldn't stay in position, you know?
Right.
It kept popping out. Now, Coda in an MX-5 like that, a majority of the track is in fourth gear.
Perfect.
So for most of the gear, like for the S's, for instance, are in fourth gear. So I was holding fourth gear in with one hand on the shift lever and steering with one wheel through the S's going in the wet. And I was like, okay, this is a pretty hairy situation I got going on here. And luckily, though, the MX-5 was a very cooperative little car. It was very eager to do what I wanted, and I was like, thank God for that. The next day, I had fourth gear fixed, and I ran again in a pretty damp condition. And I almost won. I finished in second, right behind Bretton Williams, who also used to race in, I think, Fairly World Challenge as well for Tech Sport last year.
Yeah, he sure did.
And his car had much more horsepower and had much less weight, but in the rain, heavier weight was a better advantage because my car is a lot more stable.
Well, so, and I've never heard...
I was able to keep up with him.
You know, I know you're new to this racing stuff, but I've actually never heard a race car driver say, I've got way more horsepower than the rest of the guys. Most race car drivers say, that guy had way more power than me, but I killed him in the corners. So, not surprising.
No, that's exactly how it was. And it's seriously, that motor, he has a nasty little MX-5, that thing he has built is a beautiful car. Sounds absolutely unreal for a proper race car, you know?
All right.
And it's like a fully race built, and then the MX-5 is a stock block, but in the wet, the power is a lot more of a disadvantage, especially when you have less weight.
Sure.
So, you know, I've studied the lines and tactics of Ayrton Senna, who of course died before I was born, but doesn't matter, still a good person to study for rain racing, so... Using that kind of knowledge I gained through the lovely YouTube, kind of employed it during the race, and it ended up working. I was like, wow.
So you then come to the first Touring Car America race at COTA, which is a couple weeks later. It doesn't sound like the weather's changed at all.
No, it wasn't great there either, huh? If you remember that weekend, it was not very good.
Yeah, it was very miserable. But what were your expectations coming in? It's going to be your first pro race. What were your goals for that weekend? Like, where did you hope to finish? What did you hope to gain out of your first weekend? I mean, did you think you were going to win the race? Where were you? Where was your head at going in?
I had no intentions of even coming close to winning the race. But I did my research on my opponents, you know, guys like Tyler Maxson and Nick Whitmer. And I see the pedigree, and I'm like, you know, these guys are very, very, very good. You know, it's not going to be, even if I have a chance, by some stroke of luck, I have a chance to someone get a podium, it's not going to be an easy fight. So, you know, guys like that are very, very good drivers as well. And so I just expected to finish. My goal was top 10 was for that race, was to finish top 10. I said, if I can score at least 1 point or at least, you know, points finished, I'll take it as a start. You know, that's a good goal to set for a beginning, right?
Yeah, sure.
So that was the goal.
And what about for the season? What were your season-long goals? Did you have some going in?
Yes. So my season-long goals still kind of apply to this day. It's kind of to, before I even think about moving anywhere in terms of series, I want to make sure I can get my sponsorship covered for this series first. I want to try to learn the business side of it because I know I can figure out the driving, but first I need to figure out the business because I can't figure out the sponsorship deal. Money's only finite, and, you know, this is pretty much coming from my college fund right now. I've been very lucky to have parents as supportive as I do. But it's finite. If I can't figure out the business side, I won't have to worry about the driving side at all, you know?
I think
so,
that's smart.
Trying to figure out the ropes of this year, trying to get my networking done, trying to get my ride covered for even just DCA as a starter and go from there. Because I realize, you know, I'm still fairly young. I have time to go, so might as well get it squared away now early, get used to the business side, because I know I can adapt to the driving. I just need to square away the money side first, but most important.
Sure. So, but did you have goals to be, say, rookie of the year for the season, or did you want to get a top five or get a win or any of those kind of goals?
Well, ultimately, yeah, of course, a win would be really nice. That's, you know, if any goal of mine when I come to a race weekend ultimately is the win. Because if you're settling for second, why are you showing up? But then at the same time, being realistic and saying, okay, first is a long shot. What is the best I can garner and work my way up to a first in the future? It's kind of the mindset I use when I go into a race weekend at TC America so far. It's kind of just trying to figure out what can I weekend without over-pushing it and being realistic while working to improve to maybe get a win some point in the season. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I gotcha. And, you know, there are some other people in the class that have similar backgrounds to you. Sally McNulty was a Time Attack person who's doing her first year of wheel-to-wheel racing. And
she's doing great so far, too.
Yeah.
She's put up a fight for sure. She's doing great.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know much about you, so I was paying attention. I noticed you qualified, I think, sixth or seventh at Sonoma. So I thought that was pretty good for someone who I didn't know what his background was. So I see that you're starting to get the speed, but we're six races in. You've had a couple of top 10 finishes and some DNFs. So what have you learned now? So what have you learned about the series at this point?
That ultimately, if you have the speed, it comes down to a battle of reliability. I know some of the front-wheel drive cars, like the Minis and the Hondas, they struggle with push issues halfway through the race because they go through front tires because they're front biased. And then it comes down to a reliability thing, right? So, like, having the Subaru is a fantastic car, but at the end of the day, it still is a road car that is being adapted for race use. So it does have a lot of heating problems, you know, it has a lot of little finicky issues that are tough sometimes, and that can be disheartening, but you can't expect every race to go according to plan. I mean, ask any high-level race car driver, the majority of them probably haven't gone according to plan, right? So I've kind of learned this year, in this series especially, that a lot of things can happen at this level of racing, especially, that are out of your control. Things that you may not necessarily intend to happen, but by, you know, bad luck or just by circumstance, it does. And you kind of have to roll with it, right? Pick your head up and get prepared for the next race or do what you can to learn what happened, you know?
No, I think that's good. I mean, there's a guy named Dr. Jacques who was actually Senna's psychologist, and he's still a racing psychologist today. But as he says, Jacques Dallaire says that you can only really worry about the things that you can control. Because if you worry about things that are out of your control, it's just a waste of time. So I think that's a very good philosophy that you have there.
It's kind of the same thing I try to apply to my day-to-day life. But what I can't control, I won't worry about. It's just not in my control. The racetrack is an extension of my daily life in that sense.
Gotcha. So we're about a week to 10 days ahead of Portland. What's your goals going into Portland? You're now six races in. What's your goal for Portland?
Okay. Goal for Portland is going to be to try to win, first and foremost, but I would be happy to settle with a top five finish, if that makes sense. A win would be a stretch, but a top five finish would be a real attainable, realistically happy goal for me.
Okay.
If I could finish top five or even a podium.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. I think that a top five would be a good goal for you, a good way to go. And if you got a top five, I think it would be really showing some improvement and some gains. So I think
right, that's another goal, too, to show some improvement.
And so that's basically what your goals are for Portland. What about for the remainder of the year? What's your high-level goal? What do you hope to, you know, come Vegas time when the season's over, what do you hope to look back on and say, okay, this is what I've done and this is what I hope to do?
Well, my biggest, hopefully, I will have my drive for next year covered. Because, you know, half of it is about worrying what you're going to be doing next year, right? And to have a solid plan that I can know what direction I'll be moving in towards the end of the year. That way I'll know how to prepare in the offseason and how to properly study and maintain and train and, you know, get ready for the new season to start. You know, if I have a clear-cut direction, it makes it a little easier to know what to do. And also to, you know, by the end of the season, at least have one podium. I want that champagne, man. I want it bad. Since I was a little kid, since I saw Michael Schumacher spraying it with Mika Hakkinen on the podium, I thought I want to be those guys, you know, shooting champagne.
So do you have your whole plan figured out to shoot the champagne? Like what you're going to do exactly or not?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to spend about 5 seconds spraying it. And then the rest of it, I'm not wasting perfectly good bubbles. I'm going to drink, you know, a good deal of it if I work for it. And I'll probably be a good deal thirsty, too, after being hot in the car. You know, it always amazed me. People spray it for so long, I'm like, stop spraying it and start, you know, drink a little bit of it. The champagne spoils up your victory, you know? Don't waste it. Not to sound frugal, but you know,
I hear
good champagne, you know, might as well.
Yeah, especially for a 22-year-old guy, that makes perfect sense to me. I remember when
absolutely.
I was 22. So,
yeah, you know, that's exactly it.
So, is there anyone, any partners, or anyone you want to, you know, talk about before we sign out and close out this episode?
Any partners in general? Well, I gotta thank the guys at Tech Sport Racing for doing everything that they've been doing so far this season. You know, it's been a pretty tough season so far for my car in particular, but, you know, given the circumstances, I think we're handling it well. Also, obviously, my main partner in crime right now, my parents, specifically my father. Big thank you to them. You know, if you can call them the corporate partners right there.
Absolutely.
Without them, obviously, I would be in a classroom right now finishing up my degree probably. So infinite thanks to my parents for supporting me and sponsoring me like they do. I know not everybody is as lucky as I am. So, you know, have to be humble and give the biggest thanks to them. And as far as that goes yet, not quite yet, the hunt for partners is still going on. And the chase is getting closer, thankfully, but hopefully if we ever have a podcast down the road, the partners list will be longer.
Well, that's good. Robert, it's been fun to get to know you. I look forward to talking to you in person up at Portland. I really didn't know your background going into this, and when I first talked to you, I said it's probably going to be like your worst blind date you've ever had, because I know nothing about you. So,
right.
I had a
it
really
was,
good...
It was painfully not awkward. awkward, so it was okay. It was not painfully awkward. We're all right.
All right. Well, I'm glad I wasn't the. I'm sure I'm the ugliest blind date, but I also am glad that it wasn't too painful for you. But I really enjoyed learning about you and what your journey's been to thus far. And I wish you good luck throughout the rest of the season. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Joe. We'll see you in Oregon.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to the Touring Car America podcast, where touring car racing comes to life. Please like, comment, and subscribe to the show. And for more series information, go to the series website at tcamerica.us.